Welcome back to Nothing But the Truth. This week, we are honored to be joined by Dr. Thomas Duesterberg, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, where he focuses on economic policy, international trade, and the U.S. manufacturing sector. In the past week, President Donald Trump announced sweeping new tariffs, including a baseline 10% tax on U.S. imports and additional reciprocal tariffs targeting 90 countries, with China facing a cumulative 125% tariff. These measures have sparked tremendous volatility in the global markets. President Trump asserts that these tariffs are a response to what he describes as a national emergency caused by unfair foreign trade practices, leading to a huge trade deficit. He believes that imposing these tariffs, the U.S. will boost domestic production, create American jobs, and generate substantial revenues to reduce taxes and pay down the national debt. Certainly so much to consider and so much to talk about. We are so lucky to have Dr. Duesterberg, who brings a deep well of experience, having served as Assistant Secretary for International Economic Policy at the U.S. Department of Commerce and as former CEO of the Manufacturers Alliance. His voice is one of the most trusted when it comes to understanding the complex intersection of economics, national security, and global competition, especially as it relates to China, supply chains, and America's industrial strength. With so much at stake, both at home and abroad, there's no better time to hear from someone with Dr. Duesterberg's expertise. So, Tom, welcome to Nothing But the Truth.
It's an honor to be with you, Trudy.
So it is very, very crazy times that we are living in. And I'm so happy to have you here to break it down for all of us. President Trump is actually calling this moment an economic revolution against decades of other nations taking advantage of the United States. In the years following World War II, the United States played a central role in rebuilding the global economy, opening our markets, lowering trade barriers, and helping to facilitate prosperity around the world. But over time, those very policies that strengthened our allies and promoted globalization also began to chip away at our own industrial base. And we saw the offshoring of manufacturing, rising trade deficits, and an increasing dependence on countries like China for critical goods. Can you walk us through that arc? How our post-war economic leadership led to unintended consequences for American workers and industries, why the Trump administration now sees this as a critical moment to radically change course, calling this an economic revolution. What does he mean by that? How did we get here?
Okay, well, that's a pretty good introduction to the moment that we are in. And this moment is the culmination of 75 or 80 years of post-war history. Let's just spend 1 minute on how we, the current economic, global economic system came into being. So we had a terrible depression. We had a terrible war in Second World War. Fortunately, the United States came out victorious in that, and was able to become the leader in establishing a new sort of international economic system, sometimes loosely referred to as the Bretton Woods system. But the reality at the time in the late 40s and the early 50s was that Europe was devastated by the war, and before that by the Great Depression. Asia was in chaos. The great Japanese co-prosperity sphere that they tried to establish in the midst of it, devastating Japan, Korea, eventually Japan, but China, Southeast Asia, Korea. The industrial world was in chaos. The United States came out of that as the arsenal of democracy, if you will. We had in 1950, almost 50% of the global economy, and certainly 50% or more of the manufacturing capacity. So we had the leverage to set a system in place that hopefully would lead to more stability and prosperity around the world. It's, I think, good to note that at the time, there was a realization on the part of U.S. leaders that the Great Depression was caused in part, in large part, by the Smoot-Hawley tariffs, the high tariffs that were put in place, but also by the efforts of the Japanese and the Germans especially to create their own spheres of influence and dominance. And they were the defeated parties. But the link between trade protectionism and economic chaos and the politics that came out of the economic chaos were on the minds of the leaders of the United States and some far-reaching thinkers in Europe. So they put together a system that assumed that closer open trade systems would be a benefit both to in terms of economics, but in terms of global politics. And that if nations traded with one another, it would be a contribution to political stability and comity between nations. But at the same time, we had the colossus of Russia coming onto the scene. So the solution that the leaders proposed at the time was a more open global system. Eventually that led in terms of trade to the what eventually became the World Trade Organization. And the United States at the time was very conscious of the need on the one hand to see an economic revival in Europe as a bulwark against both political instability, but the what I call the colossus of the Soviet Union. So we were...
What do you mean by the colossus of the Soviet Union?
Well, the Soviet Union came out of the war as, at least with strong industrial and defense power. They controlled all of Eastern Europe. They were a threat internationally because they were promoting communism, the rise of communism in the East and in the West. We had, you know, a war in Korea. We had communist parties threatening to become the dominant parties in France and Italy. And they were strong the rest of Europe as well. So this is a long way of making a point that we were very interested in an economic revival in Europe and in Japan. And we the United States were willing, because we dominated the global economy at the time, to give preferences to especially Germany and Japan. And so the early structure of the what was called the GATT, General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, and later the World Trade Organization, was very kind in many ways to Germany and to Japan, because we wanted them to be strong again, where we didn't have to support their economies, and they would become self-sufficient in a way that allowed them to be contributors to a global system that fought back against the communist power.
Well, I think this point that you're just making is so incredibly fascinating, because I think the average listener, myself included, wouldn't have really put that together, that you know, making countries economically strong is an advantage in terms of resisting Russia, for example, and communism. And, you know, it just seems like such a now that you've laid it out, such a natural combination that economically strong countries are also militarily strong. But hearing you describe it is really fascinating. So continue. I'm so sorry.
I'll try to be more concise. So the rules that were put in place in what became the World Trade Organization were in many ways favorable to Germany than to the European Union as it evolved in Europe. The State Department in the 50s told the National Association of Manufacturers and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce not to push too hard the U.S. advantage in industrial products. So that allowed especially the German economy, but also the Italian, the French, and other economies to come back strongly. And they had then what the Europeans called the 30 glorious years, where their economies grew very strongly. So they became a competitor to the United States, but embedded in the rules of the trade system were advantages for, let's just focus on Europe. Like on agriculture was one, because that's what the Europeans insisted on, but also in things like autos, they had a higher tariff on autos than we had. There were all kinds of differences like that. So the combination over the long course of time since the Second World War was, as these economies improved, the advantage that the United States had in the 50s and 60s, let's say, in the industrial sector gradually eroded. And that resulted in trade deficits, structural trade deficits that date back to at least the era of Richard Nixon. At the same time, Japan became a major competitor, and we had many trade disputes with Japan, which was very protective and used subsidies all over the place to become an industrial power. Then the third element that really led us to the present was the rise of China. And again, we were tolerant of working with the Chinese, partly because Kissinger thought it would be a great thing, and it probably was, to have China more or less in the outside of the Soviet Union's orbit. But the Chinese are very hardworking, smart people, and they engineered a industrial comeback. We let them into the World Trade Organization in about 2001. I think they formally became a member. But China was never a market economy. It was a mercantilist economy. They've always been interested in building out their own economy, especially in the industrial sector. So they became, over time, a new economic superpower. And the way they operate is they subsidize industry, they give it advantages, they keep out Western industry unless they want to learn from those Western industries. Like the classic example is high-speed rail. The high-speed rail companies from Japan and France and Germany went into China. China took their technology and now is dominant in the world. The Chinese have done that with solar panels, with windmills, with steel and aluminum. Now they're doing it with chemicals and electric vehicles. So they subsidize, they overproduce, and their economy is totally dependent on exporting to the United States and to the rest of the Western world. So that's where we are now, is that in the first Trump administration, that administration started to push back against China. But also there was trouble in the rules of the World Trade Organizations, because the Europeans would never give up the advantages that they had in embedded into the rules of the World Trade Organization. So
advantages that they had received from the United States.
Yeah, for instance, I mean, I keep mentioning agriculture, but we have a common agricultural policy in Europe. They subsidize about 40% of their production. They export a lot, but they keep us out. They have regulatory measures such as ban on genetically engineered grain, genetically engineered meat. So there's a lot of frustration with that that the Trump administration started to push back on. So none of the problems got solved in the Trump administration. They didn't get solved in the Biden administration. So Trump is back. He doesn't have to get reelected. He's doing what he thinks is the right way to solve all of these problems, which have accumulated over time. So he started putting tariffs on. Unfortunately, in my view, he was like a bull in a china shop, and he put tariffs on everyone, including our friends and allies. At the same time, Trump and others got frustrated with the lack of support for defense industries in Europe and in the Far East as well, where the United States was the guarantor of peace and stability and had to spend a lot of money on national defense. So that has entered into his calculations, Trump's calculations, on the need to kind of force nations to rebalance the common good, if you will, the common good being defense, but also stable economies. So these tariffs are designed, at the highest level as means to basically try to force countries to contribute more to defense, to rectify the longstanding differences in the way imports and exports are treated in the rules of the World Trade Organization.
Okay, just let me stop you for one second. For those listeners who are joining late, we are here with world economic expert, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, Dr. Thomas Duesterberg. So you've said a lot. I have two questions. Firstly, so it seems like following World War II, America stepped in and wanted to help the nations of the world grow again and become strong again and become prosperous again. And for lots of different reasons, not just because there was an altruism, but also because it would be a stabilizing force in the world against this growing communism, growing Russian bloc. And somehow along the way, so we gave a lot of advantages to these countries, and somewhere along the way, they no longer needed the help that we were given, and we were being drained, really being drained. It's shocking to me that no other president really stopped and did anything up until this moment, where it seems to me at a moment of crisis. Our debt is so high. It just seems like we're at a moment of crisis. First of all, can you comment on that? And if you can, what is the overview? What is the current state of our economic health right now? I know our debt is very high, so that's number one. And then after that, I would like you to just explain what tariffs are in a very simplistic way, just for those listeners who might, benefit from that. And then I'd love to hear your, a little bit of a conversation about the tariffs that we hear so much about on the news now.
Okay, well, the state of the American economy is actually pretty good. I mean, we were a very inventive country. We're the most market-oriented. We are culturally, we value entrepreneurs. We value the financial sector that funds the development of our manufacturing sector, our high-tech sector. We value a very efficient and productive agricultural sector. So for all of these reasons, we've been a strong economy. We're the largest economy in the world in terms of per capita production. We're far among the leaders in the world, only lagging behind countries like Norway, which have lots of oil wealth. So it's a strong economy, but we've been lax in paying for the various benefits that we use our wealth for. We've been running not only trade deficits, but fiscal deficits. I think the last time we had a fiscal surplus was about 25 years ago. And so we've been accumulating a lot of debt. And the need to pay off that debt is harmed in certain respects by the global trade system in the following way. Because we are the strongest economy in the world, our currency is the reserve currency of the world, and we've always valued a strong dollar. It helps our purchasing power, but it also contributes to the trade deficits because it makes our products more expensive. So we've accumulated a lot of debt, and the need to refinance that debt is hurt by the strong dollar, which keeps helps keep interest rates somewhat high compared to other countries. So for all of these reasons, the Trump administration is trying to do a giant rebalancing act. And in your opening remarks, I think you used the term a revolution in the economic system. Well, it really is one that Trump is trying to pull off. So he wants to lower the trade deficit, get other countries to make more contributions to national defense, and to back off on the privileges that they have in the trade system. And so the tariffs, which are just a, well, let me...
Sounds like a good idea to me. Sounds like these are very good goals. Okay.
Well, you asked what tariffs are. I mean, tariffs are simply price that is paid when countries export goods into the United States. Sometimes they're tariff-free. Prior to the Trump administration, the average tariff for all products coming in the United States is only about 3%. Now we've increased that under Trump in the last 2 weeks by a factor of almost 10.
But our goods are being tariffed abroad. So
yeah,
I think that's only fair. I mean, these countries that we were giving that benefit to way back when no longer need it. And it's not necessary anymore. So they should pull the tariffs off. And I think it sounds like a very reasonable thought. Am I wrong?
Okay. They use the term reciprocal tariffs. That's what Trump tried to make that case. The problem that I see and that the stock market sees is that we have applied these tariffs to friend and foe alike. and friend and foe is an economic term in the sense that there are some countries, such as the Netherlands or the Great Britain, for that matter, where we have a trade surplus, but we put tariffs on them anyway. We have a free trade agreement with Canada and Mexico, and we put tariffs on them as well. So,
but what do you mean a free trade? Doesn't Canada tariff our goods, or they do not?
At a very low level, with certain exceptions, and that's what Trump is focused on. For instance, cheese and dairy products, which is important to states in the Midwest, have something like a 200 or 300% tariff. It's complicated after you reach a certain low level of exports.
Is that going into China, going into Canada?
Going into Canada, yeah.
So that's a very high tariff.
It is. But my view is, I mean, we've negotiated these things in the past, and we need to renegotiate them. But for instance, with the countries that we have free trade agreements, most of the tariffs are pretty de minimis, pretty low. We have free trade agreements, South Korea, Colombia, Singapore, Costa Rica, Canada, Mexico, others. So we've put, you know, across the board tariffs on all of them. Now, I'm going to get into my personal view here. I think that China is the biggest problem. We have a $300 billion a year deficit with China. China doesn't believe in the rules, any rules of the world trade system. They subsidize their products. They steal our intellectual property. They restrict access to their own market so that we can't compete in their market in a fair way. But China's a big country. It's the second biggest economy in the world. They're very determined. I think it would be better to work, not antagonize our friends by the sort of across the board tariff activity that Trump has put into place. Now, he changed that today. He gave most nations, including the Europeans and the Japanese and the Koreans, a 90-day window to renegotiate the terms of trade. And there's lots of stuff that needs to be fixed with these countries. But instead of, you know, imposing 20 or 30% tariffs on them, it would have been preferable to quietly enter into negotiations with them. And at the same time, enforce as one of the conditions for reaching an agreement, let's say with the Europeans, you know, Trump has talked about national defense, and the Europeans say that they're going to contribute more to national defense, but we should also demand that they help us push back against the mercantilist nation that has really shaken up the world trade system, which is China. And we'll see, I guess, because the situation as of this afternoon is that China is the recipient of the highest tariffs that Trump has put on anyone. It's up to 125%. And he's got this 90-day reprieve for other countries. Will China buckle under? I don't think that they will. But it would be immensely helpful to us if we could get more help than we've gotten in the past, especially from the Europeans and the Canadians and the Mexicans, for instance, in pushing back against China. And so that's my only beef with the way Trump has gone about this. And clearly, the Wall Street doesn't like the uncertainty that is occurred because, you know, we're changing these things hour to hour almost, and it's hard for businesses to operate in this environment. So a more consistent, systematic approach to curing these problems, I think, would be better than, you know, changing on a dime and the massive tariffs that we've put on so many of our friends.
Well, it's possible that the administration shares your view, and that's why they gave the 90-day reprieve to our friends. So it's very possible that they agree with you.
There are clearly many people within the administration and in Congress, and you probably know some of those people and hear from them. But so far, they've been a little reluctant to criticize Trump because he can be somewhat vindictive in certain ways. He is politically powerful. He can hurt the careers of people who don't agree with him. So we'll see how it all turns out. But there are people who agree somewhat with the types of positions that I've articulated here.
So I just want to come back to one thing for a moment. Like you had mentioned that the U.S. debt is huge. China owns a big chunk of that. Could you talk about that for a moment? And should we be worried about that? And, you know, what does that actually mean for us?
One of the goals that Trump's economic advisors have advocated is trying to get the cost of servicing our debt through treasuries lower. High interest rates, you know, cause us to have to pay more to pay off our debt, which is growing all the time. We now pay more in interest on our debt than we do for national defense. I think people know that. China does own a lot of treasuries, but they've sold off a lot in the last 3 or 4 years because they don't want to be dependent on the U.S. dollar. They're trying to promote their own currency and their own currency system. They want to get out from underneath the ability of the United States to sanction them because of our the strength of the payment system and the reserve system that has evolved since the Second World War. So China's already sold a lot of their treasury holdings in the last few days in an effort to keep their currency, the yuan, stable. They've sold even more treasuries, a lot of them. So the perceived leverage that China had over the United States and their threat to undermine the dollar by selling their holdings of the treasury are severely limited now because China has already sold a lot of those treasuries. And because of the tariffs that have been put in place, they had to sell a lot more in the last 3 days. So I don't think that the threat of the Chinese to undermine the U.S. dollar by massive selling of massive holdings of treasuries, I don't think that's gives them any advantage anymore because they don't have the holdings anymore that they used to have.
That's fantastic. That's the best thing I've heard today. Very, very good news. So another issue that you know that I'd like to look at for a quick second is the national security risk of relying on adversarial nations like China for critical supply chains. So, for example, the fact that nearly 100% of our pharmaceuticals are produced overseas, many in China, that seems to me a very big risk. So how do we let ourselves get there, and how do we get out of that?
Well, it certainly is a risk. People often talk about rare earths and critical minerals, which China controls those. And that's due to the negligence of past administrations who haven't paid attention to our growing dependence on China. The same perhaps with pharmaceutical precursors. So the question that I have and many others have is, can we do it all ourselves? There are certain things that we need to do that are for our national defense technology. We need to be able to produce airplanes. We need to be software that is used in high technology weaponry. We need to produce semiconductors, which are important to all high performance machinery, including weapon systems. So we need to work on that. Can we do it all in the United States? I think is something we should focus on. Many of us have argued that it, from an economic, especially from an economic point of view, but also a political point of view, we shouldn't expect to do everything ourselves, but we should rely on our close partners. Critical minerals, which people talk about a lot, Canada and Australia have lots of it. I think we should work with them to solve the problem of dependence on China for critical minerals. Semiconductors, Japan and South Korea make semiconductors very well. They're now investing in the United States. Europe makes a lot of the equipment that is used to produce semiconductors. So sort of randomly and indiscriminately putting high tariffs on those countries, which are our friends, diminishes the possibility to cooperate with them on having a sort of a Western oriented, to use overused, imprecise term, but a group of allies that we can rely on for economic reasons, but also for national defense reasons. And we're sort of alienating them by the way the tariffs have been rolled out in the last few weeks. So I think we need to change our approach somewhat to a quieter, more negotiated relationship, negotiation-oriented relationship with our allies, because we need them both to fight back against China, but also to have the economic and military resources for our self-defense.
Well, it's very possible that President Trump is doing what he always does, is throwing out a very shocking position and then, you know, letting it play out. And here we see it is playing out. All of a sudden, all of the nations are calling. We've seen that in the news. They're all calling the White House to, you know, schedule meetings. We saw Bibi Netanyahu, you know, was already here. And maybe that's his way of getting attention and getting these countries into the negotiating room and actually negotiating. Now he put the 90-day hold on tariffs, and maybe this will play out exactly as you're saying, which is greater cooperation, a better deal for the United States. I mean, I think clearly it's time to renegotiate those terms. The world is not the same place it was following World War II, and it's really important to renegotiate. So maybe that was his technique of getting them to the negotiating room. It seems like, you know, he does that, and hopefully that's the result. And, you know, your view will be the correct one, which is greater cooperation with our friends and, you know, being able to stave off these enemies. And making the country, our country, a stronger and safer place and more economically sound. Are you optimistic? Like, are you optimistic about the future? Do you think that we can control China? They play such a huge role at this point, in our economic system. Do you think that it's possible to readjust this?
Actually, yeah, I am optimistic about that. I mean, I'm optimistic about America. You know, as Churchill said, Americans always get to the right place after trying out all the other alternatives. So I hope that you're right in your assessment of Trump's strategy. But with regard to China, for a variety of reasons, their economy has been weakening, and there are political ramifications that you can see on the political system in China because of the weakening of their economy. And their economy has become almost totally dependent for growth on selling products to the United States and some of our friends in the developed world. So I actually am a strong supporter of President Trump's pushback against China, because I think their economy is very vulnerable to limiting their ability to export their overcapacity in industrial products and also their technology products, which they're becoming better at. So to long answer to your question, I am optimistic that if we continue the current path and if we manage to get our friends and allies to help us with that, that we will certainly be able to do some great harm to the Chinese economy, and they will have to decide how much pain they want to take.
So when we're hearing words on the news like recession, inflation, first of all, do you see us going into a recession because of these tariffs and because of what's going on? And also, do you see this correcting the situation soon? I'm just asking for my own like stock account. Just want to get an idea of, what I could look forward to in the next, and how quickly we can reverse these tremendous losses.
Well, I think the quicker we can reach an accommodation, at least with our friends, and reduce the high tariffs on our friends and get them to participate more in the global good of economic and political stability, national defense stability, the better off we're going to be from a macroeconomic point of view. If this drags out much longer, high tariffs there's a danger that they're going to increase inflation, which is a political problem, but an economic problem as well. And so there is a danger of recession if this current instability and existence of high tariffs almost across the board, if that continues, there is a danger of a recession. So that is why we need to get moving fast. And we would like to see coherence and stability in the approach that the Trump administration takes to settling the negotiations with our friends. Right now, it's highly unclear what Trump would accept as to settle all these problems that we've been talking about. So it's a question of timing, and consistency that at least the financial market, that's why the financial markets are so worried. It's just uncertainty, I think.
And do you foresee that going on for a long period of time, or do you have any clarity on that?
I think it's going to take a while to settle things with the Chinese. Okay, but I have more hopes that the Trump administration will adapt a way of negotiating with our friends to allow a return to a lower tariff environment with our, at least with our friends. And that could be a major contribution to, you know, helping our economy avoid a recession.
Well, I thank you so much for your knowledge, your clarity, and sharing it with us in a way that we can understand. So, Tom, Dr. Duesterberg, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. Your depth of knowledge and your clarity on these very complex issues is something that myself and our listeners really appreciate. We hope to have you back again as this continues to unfold. And, you know, hopefully you will come back again real soon, because it seems to be unfolding very quickly. To our listeners, thank you for joining us. This has been Nothing But the Truth with Trudy Stern. You can catch us every Thursday at 9:30 p.m. on the radio. And if you missed any part of this show or want to listen to any of our past episodes, you can find Nothing But the Truth wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and keep seeking nothing but the truth.